Most Crusade Channel wannabes only get the mission half right.
Men, you are about to embark on a great crusade to stamp out runaway decency in the West.
So why settle for half-baked radio hacks crusading in mono when you can get the real deal on The Mike Church Show?
Now go do that voodoo that you do so well.
In stereo. Oh, oh, oh. The Mike Church Show's Great Crusade is on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Not anymore, you're not. I always liked this song, and I think this is from the album Behind the Nylon Curtain. You know, when you think of a rock star, as it were, like, well, William Joel, can't remember his real name, but one of those videos, the guy that plays Ed Sullivan says it. He's a Jewish-Italian kid from New York, obviously. But this album, I can remember back in the day when it came out that the usual talk radio mafia suspects savaged this. He goes, well, this idyllic view that we got to have industry, that's just not, but look, this is America. We got a warfare state. So we had to job some things out to the Chinese. Big deal. It's okay. We have to rise the professional economy here, the service industry, as they say. I never got a vote on that, by the way. But just listening to that song, I guess what? It came out in the early 90s, 25 years after its release. If you were to go to Allen, and I'm assuming Allentown is a real town, I believe it is. If you were to go to Allentown today, what do they manufacture there now? That military-industrial complex, as you just heard Dwight David Eisenhower talking about. That was from his farewell address, by the way. I did not put the music in. That was the only recording of it I could find the day I went looking for it. I'm sure there's one out there that's clean that doesn't have the music bed, and I'll try and find it. What would Allentown look like today? Are there any McMansions for the men that went off into the steel mills to go pour the steel in Bethlehem and in Allentown? How many of you remember the movie Rudy? Rudy, Rudy, Rudy. Sean Ashton, who played, what's Sam's name? Are you a Tolkien fan? Sam, what's his last name? No, I know it's Sean Ashton. In the Lord of the Rings book, what is Sam's last name? Gamgee, that's it, Sam Gamgee. Ned Beatty is Rudy's dad. Where does Ned Beatty work? When you don't think that the libs are all in on this together and they're all in the same scam, where does Ned Beatty work? He works at a steel mill in Allentown or a place like Allentown. What does he tell young Sean Ashton when he goes off to college? I don't want you to ever have to work here. Why? Why not? That's just a whole generation of, I don't want you to ever have to go what I went through. Why not? What was wrong? What was precisely wrong with being a plumber? You know, does a plumber tell his kid, I don't want you to become one? Why not? Does the construction worker or the carpenter, the guy that is really good with his hands, does he tell his kid, you're not going to grow up and be like me? What, you stink because you actually work with your hands? In other words, folks, we are told, our culture informs us and tells us not to build things. By definition, I don't want you to grow up to be like me. You're going to have it better than me. I've often asked the question, that is the most ridiculous thing a parent could ever possibly say. Just the idea that your children have added 2,000 or 200 square feet to the square footage of the house that they have, that they have it better than you, could only happen in Heresy land. We don't have Disneyland anymore. They do have a Disneyland, but we live in Heresy land. In a Heresy land like America. So maybe somebody lives near Allentown. Does anyone build anything in Allentown or any of those steel towns 25 years after Billy Joel wrote that song, Behind the Nylon Curtain, which I believe was an ode to Vietnam War vets and to that generation that actually did work with the last one that worked with their hands. Those guys are the last one. We sent them off to South Vietnam in another ginned-up war so that the war machine, so that we could get rid of the good leader, Dinh Vo, and fund the war machine effort. Military-industrial complex. It's just so sad. It's so sick and corrupt. It's hard to believe that these guys, that for generations now, they've been getting away with this. All right, speaking of getting away with it, we can't even rely on our historical institutions now. Let's go to the Skype hotline and say hi to fill-in host and now accomplished author, Suzanne Sherman, who wrote this essay for the American Conservative magazine about her trip to Monticello. And Suzanne has filled in for Mark Kreslins and Dr. Michael D. George here on the Crusade Channel. It's always a delight to have our lone female voice on the air with us. Hi, Suzanne, and it actually is good morning to you because you're 2 hours behind me.
Yep. Good morning to you, Mike. It's nice to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. What was the title that Dan McCarthy gave your essay?
I believe, I'm looking at it now, Will History Remember Our Founders? Oh, will history only remember the founders as slave owners?
What, will they?
Well, if you read the comments, that certainly is the goal of what appears to be the purpose of the donation of David Rubenstein, and a result really of the public school system, which is funded by the government. And that really ties into what Mark Kresslins was discussing this morning and why he homeschools and why I do as well.
Well, I think that when you're faced with the with a good conscience and goodwill, good Christian will, and you look at what the public school system, what it produces, number one, and then what your children are subjected to, I regret not homeschooling my children now. And I did homeschool them in Latin and some other things that they weren't getting in school, and in history. I should say I supplemented their education. But why would anyone leave their children to the public school system, and they're now going to start preaching about trannies and transgender and opening the bathrooms up like so many school systems are? I mean, it's just another insult.
Well, I'll tell you what I experienced in the short time that my kids were in school. It was a private school in Morgan Hill, California. Mm-hmm. And what I heard was a lot of the moms just couldn't wait till their kids were old enough till they could dump them off all day and go and do their adult things without having to deal with their kids.
That's right.
And the problem is when you delegate this sort of obligation, which is to raise your own children, educate your own children, those that have an agenda will take over and subvert your family values. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. In the school, this is kind of going off the subject of the founding fathers, but right. The first school that I went to in San Francisco recently made headlines because they had transgender or gender neutral, actually, bathrooms. Now, this was for kids that were in first grade, and they were proud of it. And you see how they begin this indoctrination purpose very early on.
844-527-8723. Our very own Suzanne Sherman joins us here on the Dude Maker Skype line. If you'd like to give a phone call in, here's the subject. Now, we're going to get to your comments, but I think we can tie all these together. Rod Dreher has this today, Suzanne. You might have seen this at the amconmag.com. Goodbye, public schools. I was around town this weekend and ran into a guy I know. I asked him how his family was. He mentioned at one point that public school is just not an option for them. What that surprised me. He went to public school and has always been a supporter of public education. What changed? Turns out the latest round of transgender stuff was the straw that broke the camel's back. I told him that it would be a while before that stuff got to our local public school. Yes, he agreed, but it's coming, and in his view, there was not much chance that local administrators and teachers could stop it if they wanted to. Not if it's a federal mandate. And then Dreher says, what can I say? I think he's right about that. But I thought about it all weekend. Here's a young guy who works and his wife works, ordinary salt-of-the-earth people, goes to church, but not a holier-than-thou type, not by a country mile, and he has lost faith in public education, not because of the quality of teaching or the character of the teachers, but because he has come to believe that the federal government will roll over community standards when it comes to mainstreaming sexual diversity. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that all it will take is one lawsuit or threat of a lawsuit, and gender-specific locker rooms and bathrooms will end. Now, I was actually thinking of, I had a conversation about this the other day with someone, that first time a school is forced or just gives in, and maybe even voluntarily, stupidly, they're supposed to be in charge of the juveniles. They're not supposed to act juvenile, but stupidly and juvenile, gives in and makes a transgender bathroom policy, all right? First time some little girl gets fondled, gets accosted, gets cornered, gets ogled, no matter what happens, in her own bathroom by some 17-year-old pervert standing next to her, and the lawsuits begin. Then we'll find out, we'll get to the real heart of the matter, Suzanne, which was, or the real purpose of this, it never was and it never is about what it's advertised to be. This is obviously a sop for the trial lawyers. And you can just see, and you're a lawyer, you can see the lawsuits coming down the pike, can't you?
Yeah, and it's going to be amazing to see what the outcomes are going to be and if juries will be swayed by political correctness as opposed to justice. And you see this trend also in the schools, not just as a result of federal government overreach, but also the locals that agree with this. I mean, when Gavin Newsom, there was a lesbian wedding in San Francisco that first graders were taken to on a field trip. And his admonition very early on in this movement was, get ready. This is going to be happening everywhere. And sure enough, we're seeing this several years after that event at one of the political meetings I was attending in California. One of the ladies there was a second grade teacher, and she said, I just don't know how to do this. I don't know what to say because we have two little girls that were good friends sitting next to each other, and another child says to them, well, you must be homosexuals because you're good friends. They don't even understand what these concepts are.
They're being introduced
to them by adults. Right. And then how do you explain to them what that is when you don't even want to, as a responsible parent, introduce that subject at that early age?
Well, Suzanne, if our mutual friend Dwayne Stovall is listening, Dwayne, call in on this because you have something to say. If Dwayne won't call, I'll do my best Stovall impersonation.
Those are always fun.
Mark, there I was watching the draft with Jackson. I was sitting there with my little Jackson, and on comes they get ready to draft Michael Sam, and then on comes this big bet on ESPN all about gays in NFL. Now, how am I supposed to explain that to a 5-year-old? He loves the game, Mike. He loves the game. How do I explain that to a 5-year-old? That the man wants to go in the man's locker room and be with men. I don't know. I'd turn it off. I just turned it off, Mike. But that's really it. It defies an explanation because you have no business explaining it to a child. They don't need to know.
No.
And this is the greatest imposition of all, Suzanne. The idea that Gavin Newsom knows better than the parents that send their kids to public schools in San Francisco. Now let's talk about your essay. So you write an essay, and whenever I see that Kevin Gutzman actually writes something or comment, he's very acerbic, shall we say. And when Gutzman says, I was just reading the comments on your article, they seem to have come from junior high graduates eager to broaden their knowledge.
Yes. Now, that was in a private text, but in the public one that was on the comments section of the American Conservative, he had said that it didn't really appear that people had even read the article.
No.
And why would it be so wrong to focus on the lives of what he said, the menial workers, and to the substitution of discussing articles or theories such as the Virginia plan and theories of federalism and what our republic was intended to be. And instead of that, all you see is discussions of slavery. When you first walk up to Monticello, there's a placard. We were just there again this last weekend. Same thing.
Right.
The slavery app. And the article, unfortunately, had to be cut over half of its length was cut out, and I really wasn't able to lay the foundation for what I experienced there because I also experienced this in several other sites, the most egregious of which was Harper's Ferry. My intention is to publish the article in its entirety at some point very soon.
Oh, you will. I even know where you're going to publish it at. So
fantastic.
Yeah. 844-527-8723 is our telephone number. VeritasRadioNetwork.com is a website, and you can get us on the app for the iPhone and for the Android and the Windows Phone in their respective app stores. And we just updated the app on Friday with the RSS feed, the preview feature. You're going to want to go and check that out or go download yourself a copy today. Now, when You when he says that the comments are like they came from junior high students, this is what I say. I encourage people, if you're going to publish anything like that, or if you're going to read around in any of these articles, do not read the comment section, because the farther down you get in the comments, the more IQ points you lose as you go.
And that's time I will never get back.
Yeah, you get more dumb as it goes on. You get when you get comments on comments, then you have the judgment pornosphere coming into play. And now it's a now it's not a gay pride fest. It's a real pride fest to see who can dig the most obscure quote up and throw it up in the window as Nanny Nanny Boo Boo. I got you now. And I got a better quote from Jefferson than you do, so you suck and I win. And that really is the extent of it. But if you haven't read it, what Suzanne's point was, and I actually had shared a story with Kevin about 5 years ago, Mrs. Church and I and the daughters and my stepson, we went to Monticello. And we went as a family. You know, you stop at the gift store down at the bottom. You take the bus up, right? And it was hotter than Hades that summer. And we went to the tour of the house, and all that was fine. It was like it was a gentrified older woman who had lived around Monticello her whole life. She knew the history of the building. She knew all the stories. You know, she could spin a yarn and all that. We didn't get any of the stuff that you talked about until on the way out, we decided that we would go stop at the film and go watch the film. So I go sit in there, and I got the kids in there, and we're sitting there and we watch this film, and it's a movie about Obama.
Yeah.
It's a movie. It's got Obama in it. And I'm about halfway, that's it. Either this is going to end or I'm just going to get up and leave. So,
and healthy doses of throwing in FDR as well.
Oh, yeah. The whole,
and Lincoln.
That's right. And that was the insult to the injury to throw Lincoln in there. So we got up and left. I didn't even see the end of it. And I this is before I even had I think I had an iPhone then. Went out to the car. And sent Kevin a message. I said, I am at Monticello and I cannot believe what I just saw in the viewing room. And of course he wanted to know. And I told him in a short text message, and, his response was something to the effect, well, Mike, no place is now free from this. There's just no place that's free from it. You can't get away from it now. They've taken over everywhere. It's an infestation. To think, though, that our institutions that are in charge with safeguarding the history, to think that they have become corrupted now, and that they've now basically have become, it's all about, it's not about the history now. It's now about presenting in the history in a sense or in a way that they can compete with King's Dominion, the theme park, or they can compete with Busch Gardens, the theme park, or they can compete with Waveland, the theme park. That's what history has basically now become in Virginia. It is part of the competitive landscape for family vacation time. That's what it is. It's not about the history anymore. And that's really sad.
It's become, the McDonald's. They're just appealing to the masses. There's absolutely no substance. There's no nutritional value for your brain, so to speak. And what I'm seeing, and I made a comment to some of the people that were just absolutely trashing me on my Facebook page, was that, these are the kind of people that couldn't decide what to eat unless the food that they wanted was pictured on the menu. When we talked about the comment about the junior high school education, one of the women on there said that Madison, the fact that I even went to Montpelier, Madison's home, right, shows that I was a racist, because obviously he was a racist because she imputed the 3/5 rule as being Madison's idea and said that he didn't even feel that blacks were a whole human being. They were just 3/5, which shows two things: a misunderstanding, first, that it was Madison's idea; second, that was what it was about anyway. That was never intended to show what the value of the blacks was. I mean, it's there's no connect with reality and what their arguments are. Well, and this goes into the whole junior high school. This is what I was actually taught in junior high school, was that the founding fathers were racists who didn't think that, that blacks or slaves were entire human beings worthy of representation as one-on-one.
Now, you're a crusader, so you answer the, you can answer the question. If I say what is truth, conformity of the mind to reality, what was the reality of what was happening in that room in Independence Hall in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787? There would not have been a constitution if the three-fifths clause had not been added. That was the compromise that was made by, or there were two compromises, and Kevin can tell you this. There are two compromises that were made. The first was to jettison the idea of the Senate being apportioned by population and just go with, okay, one flat formula for each state. And the second was, all right, well, for congressional representation, we're rural, we're not city-based. How in the world are we going to have adequate representation in Congress with the northern the New England states that are small but are concentrated in cities? They'll have more members of Congress. A valid concern. And so the way to and blacks were not classified as citizens. Now, you idiots, that's why the 14th Amendment is in the Constitution, you junior high dropout, is to make them citizens. So they weren't classified as citizens. They were chattel. That's unfortunate, but that's the reality. You can't alter it. You can deal with it. So that was the compromise. All right, well, we'll give you three-fifths of your... in other words, it says three-fifths of persons. What is meant by that is add up all the slaves you have in your state, and basically 60% of them will be counted as citizens. Well, you can count them in your citizenship population. And that's how you get to the to a more equitable representation. That's what the three-fifths means. It didn't mean anything about three-fifths of a person. But to know that, you'd actually have to know actual history and not a bunch of hearsay. So.
And they're not interested in
that. No, they're not interested. You know. Well, what I found is what Maggie O'Connell tells me, she spends the most time on Facebook and any of these chat rooms. There's hardly a week that goes by when she goes, Mike, that's it. I'm dropping out of life. I'm not sure I want to move to the island in Scotland with you, but I want an island. Can we buy an island? I want to disconnect the telephone. I want to disconnect the Facebook. I want to disconnect the internet. I don't want to talk to anybody anymore. The human race has lost its collective gourd.
Mike, why do you think I moved to the mountains? You know, Mark talks about secession, and I told him what I practiced was a form of personal secession, where I'm done with you, California. I'm going to the mountains, and I'm done with politics. I don't want to do this. I just want to live as what you call the hinterlands of Utah and chase deer and antelope. So, you know, taking my kids on this journey, I never expected to come across this. But once I did, and you'll see when you read the entire article, mm-hmm. that I couldn't be quiet about this. I've been accused of being an attention seeker. No, you even call me a hermit. Why am I seeking attention? You know why? Veritas, baby. This needs to be talked about. This needs to be told, this story.
Well, I think it does need to be told, and I think people need to have stories and essays like this that are relational. When I say relational, you know, sometimes people write essays and they write them in a vacuum as if, well, I'm just going to make this up and start writing about it. Okay, well, that's fine as an intellectual exercise, but when it actually happens, and I think that's what makes Dreher so popular. He's relational. Most of what he writes about is stuff that he actually experiences, or someone else has actually experienced. And, you know, people want to talk about it, and they think they have something to say about it. Now, let's go back to the school thing, and we'll finish up with this here today. When Rod Dreher says that he thinks that people are withdrawing, that the people that he knows are withdrawing, they're going to withdraw their kids from public schools, I think that that ship has already I think that the public school's demise ship has already sailed. Common Core is what killed it. The people that showed up at Common Core events, may some of them may have been what you call the junior high commenters, were commenters with junior high levels of education, but they also were actually showed up. When you show up at a school board meeting, the school board folds like an accordion. The last thing a politician wants to see is a room filled with actual constituents, Ms. Sherman. That's the last thing they want to see. That's what just shows the fraud and the fakery, the trickery that is behind our alleged democratic system. That here's what the vote was going to be here in St. Tammany Parish. It was going to pass 11-3. 500 parents showed up in a room that can only fit 150. They were standing. They were gawking through the window. They were doing FaceTime, showing the proceedings on FaceTime on their phones. And you know what the vote was? 0-14. Not a vote for Common Core, Suzanne. Not one vote.
So, well, and that's what it's going to take, is people actually showing up and being outspoken and not having that mentality that I can't wait till my kids are in school and I can go to the gym, go and have lunch with my friends. You need to be involved. And, you know, involvement is what it takes. If you are involved, you can have your kids in the public schools, because there are a lot of people whose kids have been in the public schools who are doing very well, yours included. So, if homeschooling is not an option, being there and speaking out about this and not being afraid of what people say. I mean, the backlash on this article was just astounding, but I'm thick-skinned. It doesn't bother me at all, because there's nothing that is makes it, you know, that this the truth is worth it. It makes
right,
it
right.
So I will listen to all this. But again, there came a time and point where I just stopped reading the comments.
Well, and you were, I think you were playing with fire and with your own sanity to read them in the beginning, just to begin with. But now that it's out there, I would say that the final point about the parents showing up at the school board meeting. Now, I said it was 0-14. Okay, next meeting, 300 showed up. It was 11-3. Next meeting, 100 showed up. It was 7-8. Next meeting, 20 showed up. It passed. But as soon as it passed, then the next meeting, the 500 mob was back, and they repealed it. And that's when Governor Jindal tried to shove it down our throats and say then, as soon as his education czar down here, to say, well, you know, you're in the state, and the state says you have to have it, so you're going to have it. And we basically said, no, we don't. And Jindal finally backed off, because there was a big rally outside the Capitol. I guess what I'm saying is the citizenry can affect change, but it can only be done very locally and in very, very limited circumstances. And you can do it in a city or county, but let's be honest. If the Obama administration had required the acceptance of Common Core, then St. Tammany Parish would have been sued by Arnie Becker and someone in the Department of Education. And as soon as that happened, the weak-kneed accordions that we call politicians would have folded. It wouldn't have mattered how many of them and how many parents showed up, because a federal judge just would have said, this is the law, pal. This, you're going to do it. You're going to implement it. Now, that's if. Now, so in this instance, it was still voluntary. And that's the only reason why individual parents and individual school districts are able to prevent Common Core from being part of their curriculum is because it's not a federal mandate. And I don't think it's going to be now that Obama's gone. But that's it. So what's on the future? What are you going to write about next?
Well, you know, the first thing I want to do is get this article out in its entirety.
Right.
And I'd like to discuss also what we came across in the Civil War context. Most recently, I went to the Confederate Museum in Richmond, and even that's been affected. There is a plaque there that explains the perspective of the two sides, and it said that the Southern states were under the impression that they were being invaded. I mean, holy cow.
Under the impression? You might have wanted to tell that to people that live in Fredericksburg. Did you get a chance to go to Fredericksburg?
You know, I had passed through that on our trip last year, and we had stopped where Stonewall Jackson had fallen and paid our respects. But I definitely need to spend more time in Virginia. But what's coming up for me really is it's going to be the one-year anniversary of this trip. And as I get my memories and pictures, I'm going to be posting those on my public Facebook page. That's Suzanne Sherman. And probably writing some more articles, definitely following up, maybe taking the highlights of the commentary from from this article. My two biggest detractors, and this is actually quite funny, I had gotten an open letter, a link to an open letter by a gentleman who is a self-described unemployed intellectual, and the other one who has been contacting me has a degree in Africology. So the people that they have shared this with and the commentary on those walls is just absolutely incredible. I mean, the picture he has is a picture of a slave that everybody has seen with scars all over his back. And the article says that a white woman, Suzanne Sherman, went to plantations and was tired of hearing about slavery. And that wasn't the purpose of the article at all. You know, I'm not going to preach to the choir here and repeat what it was because it was pretty obvious.
Right.
So, you know, pretty much expound upon and answer some of these accusations. One person said that I saw no evidence of slavery at Jefferson's other home, Poplar Forest, and that wasn't what I said at all either. I said that that was an exception, that the issue of slavery didn't take over the subject matter of Thomas Jefferson's home, but it was absolutely acknowledged. They paid homage to the situation, but it didn't take over, and that was the point I made. So I'm going to run with this a little bit and see what happens.
Here, I'll give you a reading suggestion. Read, let's see here, John Taylor Carolina County's book comes out in 1813. So I have the letter. I can send it to you. Read.
Please do. I love John Taylor.
Okay, so Taylor sends a copy of his, you know what it is? Taylor writes this this pamphlet, if you will, that is basically a response to John Adams's book about constitutions. And Taylor writes a response to Adams. He doesn't sign it. He just sends it to Adams, and he just demolishes his arguments. And he sends a copy of it to Jefferson. And Jefferson writes a very thorough, almost paragraph by paragraph commentary on what Taylor has sent to Adams. Now, what this shows here, and the reason I say read this, and before you write about the commentary, because it might put you in a right frame of mind here. What this says is there was a time when something was written, it was read in its entirety, and then you can contemplate it and respond to it. You can't read a paragraph and then skip two paragraphs and then read a paragraph and then go to the comments and start reading about it and actually know what it is that you're talking about to write a measured response to it. You know, you'd actually have to quote the story and quote the article. And, of course, that's not what's going on. And to read Jefferson didn't have to read that whole thing of Taylor's, but he did. And the commentary on it is so thorough, you know that he read it. That's why the commentary is thorough. And so when you think about that, that there is a way to do this. And yes, Africology, I welcome your commentary, but please read it first, sir. And that's not what a modern American has in mind when they sit down at their Facebook page or in a terminal in front of a piece of published writing. So,
well, and that was that. I don't think the majority of people that were the most vocal read past the second paragraph. They probably went over to my page also because they mentioned that, you know, Suzanne Sherman, a white woman. So apparently my opinion on that matter has less value And then the ones that did read it its entirety, that did quote me on their, had absolutely no concern whether or not I was making the point they were asserting or not. They took it to their own forums where I was not going to respond and preach to their own choirs, which they're free to do. But what was so annoying is the fact that someone that disagrees with their agenda, you know, has absolutely no right to speak their piece. And that's where we've really gone wrong, by trying to be polite and allowing this. And there's one side that is really dominating the media to the detriment, once again, of the truth. And this is just another example.
There you go. All right, Suzanne Sherman, everybody. And look forward to you filling in for someone sometime soon. And
fantastic.
maybe becoming a regular part of what we do here. We'd like to see that too. Everybody, give a big round of applause.
What in the wide, wide world?
No, wait a minute. That's the wrong one. That's the one, dummy. All right, Suzanne. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. Talk soon, folks. That's going to about wrap it up for us here today. Didn't do a lot of promotion today for what's going on the website at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. It looks like the Shoutcast server crashed earlier today, and I know why it crashed, which, if you got booted off the live listening, don't have to send angry mail. I was listening, and I got kicked out of the server. You're right, it did. And I can explain why, but perhaps on another day. Thanks for listening today. Please go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com and consider a Founders Pass membership. Consider donating to our crowdfunding effort at MikeChurch.com. But actually, all you got to do, you know, let me give you the short form of this. I actually did this to make this easier. If you go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com, under Veritas, just open that menu item up and click SOS, our mascot dog, or the SOS text. That will take you to the SOS page. Save our station, and you'll see SOS, the dog, our mascot. Actually, I found out it's probably, according to my daughter, it's some stupid dog on YouTube called Doug the Pug in a Santa Claus suit with a bowl in his mouth. Please put money in my bowl. And that lists the 11 different ways that you can assist or participate in our efforts here to bring you 24/7 live radio delivered. And boy, folks, there may be a big announcement coming your way here on the Veritas Radio Network and the Crusade Channel very soon. Hope to have it for you. I'd love to be able to start talking about this, because I think it's the next logical phase in the development of this. But you can learn all about who we are and why we ask for your support, why we ask for you to become a paid member, why we ask for you to donate, why we ask for you to advertise here. Please, advertise here. You can buy radio ads here. Why we ask for you to be in our marketing department, which means forward around our banner ads. We have two brand new Radio the Way It Should Be memes coming out today, and that'll be part of the affiliate program. So you'll find all of that at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. Of course, my site is at MikeChurch.com. Today's pile of prep transcripts from this program, my personal writings, our archives going on all the way back to, in some cases, 2006 are there as well. That's all at MikeChurch.com. Hope you have a great remainder of the day. Stay tuned for a brand new world premiere episode of Reverse Deception by Greg Carpenter. It's one of our original shows you can't get anywhere else. Coming up at noon Central, 1 Eastern. For young Christopher and Maggie O'Connell, it's Mike Church saying so long. See you tomorrow here on the Crusade Channel. May God bless you and Mary keep you.